The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Megan Smith. She's the Director for Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. Good morning, Megan. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, John.
Well, I got to describe my typical listener for you so you have some empathy. And you probably have a lot of empathy because you say, my typical listener is a federal IT professional. He or she shows up for work at 9 o'clock in the morning and they get stuff dumped on their desk. They got, you know, reducing staff. They got new objectives. They got to move to the cloud. They got security. And they got bozos like John Gilroy waltzing in with an iPad trying to get in the network. And by about 9:20, they're, you know, ready to jump out the basement window. They're really frustrated. So what I'm trying to do here is every show I try to come up with just a little, just toss them a bone. Toss them out, just give them some ideas of how maybe they can make their life easier, maybe delay till 10 o'clock before they call suicide hotline, or give us some clues at how to make their life easier, because this is a very difficult position they're in. Their hands are tied. They have to accomplish all these tasks. It's like you've got to run a marathon and we're going to tie this log to your leg. So they're limited. And so what we try to do is bring in people like you and go, well, maybe you can give us some insight, maybe some ideas that they can take away that the next transition to the cloud would be easier, or maybe they don't have to, you know, lay off someone because of staff reduction. So that's what we're trying to do here today. But before we begin, people are wondering, why is Megan in the studio? Tell us about your background and how you wound up at the GSA.
Absolutely. So I actually started my career in IT at Acumen Solutions, a small consulting firm located in McLean. I was staffed at the GSA implementing their CRM solution. At that time, around 2010, it was a very small CRM, customer relationship management implementation on a product called Salesforce.com, maybe 125 people. And my focus was really using that cloud solution. You were talking about a reduction or limitations in resources. We used the cloud at that time really to do more with less. Automating business process for the Federal Acquisition Service, they handle about $55 billion in products and services.
Whoa, it's with a B.
With a B, absolutely.
That's a lot of process.
Yes. So making sure that they had an efficient way of tracking their interactions with customers was a big deal. And from there, we slowly grew that program to include hundreds of users. And around 2011, 2012, GSA made the decision to really move into the cloud for more than just customer relationship management and leverage platforms like Salesforce.com and Google for their applications that basically automated their back office business process, so things like tracking and all types of things that make the GSA work.
So I'm going to have to give the URL because it's my process, gsa.gov, like people don't know about that. And I think really the goal here is that, okay, so let's look at the government, and everyone can say is, well, there are duplicate services in 10 different agencies that have the same 10 different programs. And so a lot of times people work in silos, and they don't know what's going on in the next building or the next zip code or in San Francisco or St. Louis. And so what GSA has done is said, well, let's, you know, stop the world. Let's sit back and take a look, and maybe we can eliminate some of this duplication. And I think that's one of the goals here with all these memos that came out in the last 6 months or change and everything else. So is this one of the big goals, maybe eliminate duplicate services, duplicate programs?
Absolutely. So going kind of back to the idea of, you know, a reduction in budget or limited resources, making sure that IT services are really performing one actual task as opposed to having 15 different applications that do the same thing is a huge focus. Otherwise, it'd be a huge drain on resources. So as part of our move to the cloud, we did a huge app rationalization exercise where we actually took about 1,700 apps and pared them down to about 80. So as you can imagine, just the, you know, focusing from, you know, that dispersed model to a very targeted model was really enabled us to do a lot more with our cloud services.
It makes sense. And in preparing for this interview, I read the little blog from Tony Scott and Mrs. Rung, I think, and Chief Zachary, and they talked about, you know, improving the way government does business. You know, maybe the process is the way that should change, and maybe one way, instead of yelling and screaming, maybe you turn the light or you say, well, this is another way to skin the cat. And if you have 1,700 apps, my guess is that you could look at groups of them, and probably there's not identical, but really, really close to being identical. And maybe if you can get an app that does maybe 70, 80% of what you need, that's probably good enough, isn't it?
Right, absolutely. The name of the game anymore is really getting to that 80%. So if you can deliver 80% of what, you know, the many use cases are, oftentimes that 20% outlier can either be absorbed or handled through, you know, another process. But really kind of targeting that either minimum viable product or 80% tends to be how we get the most out of the applications that we build today.
Monday morning, I had a meet with a bunch of software developers at 9 o'clock. So the first thing I did, I went over to Duck Donuts and got a dozen homemade, you know, fresh-made Duck Donuts, brought them in there, and they just loved it. But I was thinking about Duck Donuts. Now, what Duck Donuts does is they have they have one in Alexandria, one in Annandale, one in Herndon, maybe one in Baltimore, I don't know. But they can scale easily because they have standard processes for scaling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what has Duck Donuts got to do with the GSA? Well, the GSA is sitting back and saying, well, you got Tony's Donuts in Annandale and Bill's Donuts there and Rohan's Donuts. Why don't we take and have maybe the same machine, maybe the same starting time, maybe the same accounting processes, rather than having five different ways to do it. I mean, we can see it in the commercial world all the time, and it looks like those are the practices you're trying to apply.
Yeah, absolutely. Repeatable practices, repeatable process is huge. It's a huge time saver. It's a huge way to, you know, make sure that what you're building is scalable and enables you to grow smartly. You know, sort of once you tackle the notion of rationalizing down to the applications and the functions that you need, then you need to look forward and say, how do I scale? How do I make sure that I've built a strong foundation that can grow smartly as opposed to the legacy model where things had a tendency to kind of grow wildly?
This town here is full of govies. We know that. It's also full of associations. There's 3,500 associations in town, nonprofits. And what I see in that market is they normally had something called an AMS, Association Management System, which is a highly customized, really expensive system. They were paying 18% a year for maintenance on software, and they were getting killed. And so I see a transition in that world towards services like Salesforce. Because, well, they don't have to hire. They don't have to. It's already done. So maybe Salesforce isn't as customized as they would like, but one association is going to be drastically different from another one. And my guess is that savings is being reflected, or that perspective is the same in across agencies in the federal government.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, 9 times out of 10, there's, you know, kind of breaking that mold of needing something, you know, very, very customized or very, very specialized really equates to spending a lot of money for not a lot of value. So just like different associations still have sort of the same core business processes, we say that a lot in government. And one of the focuses we have at GSA this year and over the course of the last 2 years is this initiative called GSA Labs, which enables us to basically export applications that have consistent functionality that we see across government that other agencies can just take and use instead of having to build their own.
It's almost like GSA views themselves as a resource center, a knowledge center, or going to, remember in high school, you go to the library, I'm going to the library after school, do some research, but it's like, no, before I make this transition to cloud, maybe I'll go to GSA and maybe someone in a different agency has solved this problem, then we can share the code and reuse it. It seems so basic.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the unique things about GSA is that it truly is general services. So you have a lot of different types of services that the agency performs that also dovetail nicely into various different agencies. So we have a real hub of expertise that we can export and basically, you know, provide some thought leadership to other agencies and areas like technology.
I'll make an ageist statement here. How's this for an ageist statement? People my age, old geezers, they're special and unique and custom, and I have to have my own car and drive here. Now, my daughter, she doesn't own a car. She thinks she'll take a train anywhere. She can take a train anywhere from in a plane and this and that and Uber. And so I think in the new economy, you have to be able to reuse and scale differently than the old economy, because the stuff that worked well for me in the 1990s, well, it ain't the 1990s anymore, John. And maybe someone like you can walk in and go, well, you know, maybe you can take a train, John, or maybe you can share the code that someone else has developed. Why should you re-spend the money that's already been accomplished, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely like a cultural shift. So in addition to all of the technical things that you have to do to make this work and the foundational things that you have to establish, you also need to kind of factor in the people and making sure that you have the right people with the right mindset who can actually implement these types of new ways of thinking and designing.
Because there's no choice anymore. You know, budgets are shrinking. And people are leaving, and there's all kinds of new initiatives, and I don't know how my listeners keep up with it. Maybe they have a to-do list that's, you know, pages and pages long. Again, I'm thinking in old ways is paper, and you would have your to-do
Hopefully
list.
Hopefully there's an app for that.
Yeah, Wonderlist is what it's called. Yes. It works real well. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about innovation and shared services and scaling and how other agencies can maybe use a GSA as a library like you did in high school in order to do research on your next step moving to the cloud. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Smith, Director, Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Smith. She's the Director of Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. We've been talking about all kinds of initiatives from the GSA moving to the cloud, helping with this, helping with that. And, you know, I think we might as well go to the horse's mouth and find out what they have to say. You guys must have a blog over there, do you? Or can you go over there and read that blog? How do you find that?
Yeah, it's gsablogs.gsa.gov. And there's an array of information there from a whole host of characters from the GSA.
So when we toss out words like category management and going to GSA first, I think you can read blogs and try to catch up and see what they're doing. And I just think that's smart. I mean, if you have a deadline to move to move an application to the cloud in 90 days, I would see how other people have done it and try to save some money. And maybe I can get a tip and understand how to do something quicker or easier or faster or something. My guess is that what you're trying to do is you're trying to make the federal government rethink the whole idea of software licensing, which is a monumental task, but I think that's what you're trying to do, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Software licensing as well as software services. So, there's a huge focus on licensing and being able to harness the purchasing power of the overall federal government. And that's definitely something that, fits quite nicely into the efforts that they're doing with Vitara and that whole sort of scope of, you know, sort of buying once and, you know, leveraging the purchase across the government. And there's also the same kind of initiative with services. And in fact, services has been somewhat easier, especially on the Salesforce side. We just signed a cross-agency, so available for the whole federal government, BPA for Salesforce services that also encompass repeatable practices. So applications that are developed by USDA, let's say, could be used at GSA or could be used at, you know, any State Department or any other agencies.
You know, I drive a Honda Accord. It's not real fast. It's not real slow. It's not zippy. My wife doesn't like it, but it gets good mileage and it gets me where I want to go. It's okay. It's about 80% of what my needs are. I'm looking at something like a Salesforce. I go, well, Salesforce isn't the best thing in the world. It's not the worst thing in the world, but you know, it probably accomplishes 80% of what you want to do, and it's scalable. It's safe. It's been proven. You go down your little checklist for FedRAMP and scalable, easy, and inexpensive, and all of a sudden, well, maybe this is a tool that we can look at, or at least put it in the consideration bin or tweet everything to consider, because it seems to cover many of the general areas that, you know, these 1,200 apps we talked about. It could be covered by many of those. Not all, but a good portion of them, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And not just that, but it's also configuration-based. So again, always with an eye to budget, your developer resources, your folks who are engineers and are in there coding, they are, you know, more specialized and they're definitely going to cost more. Using point-and-click configuration where you're, you know, kind of moving a widget from one location to another location and you have, you know, sort of a less skilled type of interaction with the technology allows us to build things that are more flexible for less money.
In the commercial world, they always say, hey, we do twice as much at half the price. And hey, we're number one. We're the best. But when I read about the GSA, I hear things that look like it's a commercial company, because I read stuff that says, hey, we save 50 to 80% on software development costs by reusing existing apps and code and licenses that are used elsewhere. This sounds like a little company within a company. I mean, this is an amazing figure. If this is true, say 50 to 80%, tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you think about the infrastructure costs, you know, all of sort of the wrapper of elements that go into traditional IT and application development, moving to a software as a service or a platform as a service product like Salesforce really eliminates a lot of the overhead costs. And it also really resonates with the business. It tends to fund the IT groups because the things like patches and security and servers are not meaningful to them because they're not the layer that the business is going to see. So having to make a more significant investment in infrastructure doesn't really, you know, it feels very much like a tax, something that they're not getting value out of. So when you eliminate that and you focus on the externally facing portion, that has a much larger resonance with the business. And when you're saving money and really saving 50 or 80% because you've eliminated that underpinning element, then, you know, that's where you get into the types of things that, you know, GSA has been able to accomplish.
And especially scaling issues. I think that's really so many agencies deal with scaling they can't predict and some they can predict. For example, this this Sandy, you know, my wife and I, we drove to a wedding last August. We drove through Connecticut and we saw all those signs. I mean, that was terrible up there. And we drove back through Connecticut again. And so there were federal buildings that were affected by this, and Scalable Solutions helped solve some of the problems up there. Is that right?
Yeah. So Hurricane Sandy, that was really kind of one of the most interesting things about our move to the cloud, to see that the success of it really applied. So after Hurricane Sandy, GSA, many of the federal buildings that were on the Eastern Shore or on the East Coast generally were really flooded out. They had, you know, were not able to get online. They weren't able to achieve their sort of mission critical activities that they needed to do to support the people who were affected by Sandy. And GSA was in that same boat. Because we had moved to the cloud, we were actually able to, one of the sort of enterprising folks that was up there went to a Pep Boys because they had an internet connection and set up her computer and started working on case management and sending emails and doing all of this, all of her work, basically, as if she was in the office, but from this remote location, because we had fully moved everything off of everything she needed to do out of the traditional IT stack.
Someone my age would get a clipboard and drive to Connecticut and get a piece of paper and then all of a sudden drive back and type up my – guess what? People are dying. I mean,
yeah,
you know, look
absolutely
at this. So this report is generated from the field remotely and securely, I might add, and sometimes even with mobile devices.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we really focus at GSA on work being what you do, not where you are. So, you know, one of our initiatives was, you know, any device, any place, anytime. And really, you know, whether that's a mobile phone or your computer or, you know, a tablet, being able to access the whole sort of scope of the stuff that you need to do your job has been a huge push for GSA.
I keep thinking of Duck Donuts. So if I went into, let's say I owned a franchise of Duck Donuts and I had to get my bags from someplace and I was paying $1 a bag. And then I found out that the other Duck Donut in Arlington negotiated a deal where he was paying 50 cents a bag for their donuts. I'm going, oh, hey, I'm leaving money on the table. And I think agencies are, that's a silly illustration, but there may be an agency like Commerce that has a software application that they have a custom development or something for, and they negotiated what they thought was a good deal. But over at DOI, at Interior, they negotiated a really good deal, and maybe GSA knows about both of them and can say, well, you know, there's a shared code here, and why don't you take advantage of this you know, purchasing option here that can save money another way, just through scaling or contracting or different types of licensing agreements.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is, you know, just getting government to talk more and act like one singular entity. I mean, it's the government, and I don't know offhand, but, you know, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who work in the government and, you know, sort of a huge entity. Harnessing that buying power and, you know, getting working in concert is there's no way it couldn't help us save money and, you know, be more efficient.
About a month ago, I had three entrepreneurs in the studio. And they had three complete different offerings to save money for the govies. And I called one Agile, Hostile, and Mobile. And so let's talk about Agile.
Yes.
I mean, this is an important push. In fact, when I went to this blog that Tony Scott wrote back in December, he talked about being Agile. And, of course, there's Agile software development. We know all about the software manifesto and the mountain in Utah. We all know all about that. But there's Agile has to be applied to acquisition as well, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Agile is very much like you were saying, it's a software development sort of philosophy, but it's also a larger sort of cultural shift. And so if you really do want to develop your applications or your IT in an Agile way, you need everything around it to be Agile as well. And that does come down to acquisition. So changing the way that government acquires things, you know, instead of this sort of traditional, I'm going to buy it for a year or for 5 years, but modularizing that to say, I'm going to only, you know, think ahead for the next 120 days. And I'm going to give incentives for vendors to come under budget or, you know, become more efficient. Is just a whole new way of thinking, a whole new way of buying, but it really enables the way that we want to implement technology.
Megan, let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about specifics. Maybe we can talk about specific agencies that have implemented some of these innovations and actually saved a lot of money, because people are starting to say, well, okay, now show me. I'm from Missouri too, or I'm from the district. Show me. They want to be shown anyway, the same thing. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Smith, Director, Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Smith, Director, Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. People are listening to this interview saying, well, she's been around. She knows a bunch of stuff. What, how does she keep up with all this technology changing all the time? And that's one of my struggles. I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and reading blog. I listen to podcasts when I'm sending out email, and I'm not caught up. So how can you possibly catch up with all these changes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I rely on my very well-connected and really bright network to see what everybody else is reading. So, you know, talking about Twitter and LinkedIn and, you know, Facebook, the whole gamut, I'm looking for what everybody else is reading. So whether that's, you know, a lightweight article on Business Insider or something that's come out on FedScoop or ACT-DIAC or, you know, any of sort of the news aggregators that are specifically looking at the federal government and IT generally.
And we have mutual friends, Joe Fox, Christina Miller, really smart people.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm never going to be as smart as Joe Fox, but I could talk to him and say, what do you think about agile software development? And I would, because he's way smarter than me.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking at what those folks are reading and plugging in there, and that's really where I tend to focus.
Earlier, we mentioned Agile and Agile acquisition, but really Agile is part of the software development process. That's the way I classify it. And it's obvious that there are ways to apply Agile and there's areas not to apply Agile. And someone may think, well, Salesforce platform, that's going to rule out Agile because my hands are going to be tied. Everything's got to be Salesforce. I don't think that's necessarily true, is it?
No, not at all. So software as a service platforms like Salesforce really lend themselves well to Agile. So focusing on, you know, minimum viable product, which means what is sort of the baseline functionality, you know, talking about the 80%, what's even the 25% of the 80% that you can kind of deliver this base of functionality and do it in a 2-week or 30-day sprint, which is one of the tenets of Agile, using a configuration-based software solution like Salesforce, as opposed to something that you can code in 2 weeks or 30 days, you can really get a lot of functionality, which really falls in line to the Agile philosophy.
So it really is kind of a blended, it's a blended solution where it's not all, you know, if you choose a popular platform like Salesforce, then you're locked into any kind of business. No, you have customization options there. And maybe there's reusable code from some other agency that use Salesforce to accomplish some business process platform, like remotely connecting in and generating information from the storm, Sandy storm, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So you think about something like one of our key applications that has a huge interest outside of GSA is a very lightweight project management solution called Project Central. You know, anybody in government or really probably anybody who works has projects and they need to track those projects and keep track of milestones. So, you know, an ideal scenario is USDA needs a lightweight project tracking tool. They call GSA. We say, we've got one for you. We package it up from Salesforce, send it over to USDA. They're able to drop it in their Salesforce instance, make the necessary customizations using an Agile framework, roll it out in 30 days or 60 days, and save 50 or 80% of their costs in developing that application because they were able to get the base from GSA. And that's an actual story of what did happen. So,
wow, that's great. On my to-do list today, I have update Basecamp. And so in my world, I use Slack or Podio or Basecamp, depending on the client I work with. And so I think this, I would consider that a lightweight tool as well.
Yep.
However, you know, when I'm working with a commercial company, there's certain things that I can do and not do. It doesn't have to be rigorously documented, and my correspondence doesn't have to be locked in for discovery in the future. But there are federal agencies that they can do what you call, you know, lightweight project management, but it has to be thoroughly documented, doesn't it? So this is the compromise, is that, no, this isn't Duck Donuts. This is serious. This is commerce, and we're dealing with money and fiduciary responsibility. And when we have project management, it has to be all documented thoroughly to comply for federal regulations.
Absolutely. I mean, Agile doesn't mean not documenting. It means right-sized documentation. And, you know, in our, for instance, in our Salesforce development, we have templates that we have teams use that really, you know, the template is as big as the project's going to be. So if it's a small application, something that's going to take 60 days to develop, then maybe you have 4 pages of documentation. If it's going to take a year to develop, maybe you have, you know, 24 pages of documentation. The key is not documentation for documentation's sake, but really getting into the critical things that need to be, you know, kind of memorialized for the future.
When I was reading the blog that Tony Scott came up with in December, he talked about category management initiative and managing commodities. Isn't that interesting? It's like code is a commodity? Well, put a new hat on, John. You know, start thinking differently. It's not just somebody sitting in a room and code. It can be commoditized and reused. And I think this is one way to skin the cat to reduce costs for software development.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, code is a commodity. Anything that's developed can be, you know, packaged up and thought of as, you know, an element for export. So, you know, looking at how we acquire our technology, which tends to be the keystone to a lot of the work that we're trying to do in the government and as well as, you know, in the commercial space as well, being able to package it up and kind of send one element to one place and one element to another place is really important.
I've read a lot of stories about economic development in the 50s and 60s, and Americans would come in and they would have know-how. So that was know-how back in the 50s and 60s. And I think today with change management, there has to be informal know-how transferred as well, because someone can go to the GSA and say, here's my particular problem, and I can't seem to figure it out. You can say, well, we've surveyed several different agencies and they have a similar type problem. And so maybe that's the word know-how or experience or shared experience. I'm trying to think of what GSA is trying to position themselves as a resource for shared information on software development projects. I guess it's kind of the new know-how.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, kind of harkening back to what I said previously, where, you know, GSA is truly general services. There's a lot of different pockets that do a lot of different things, and they align nicely to other agencies. So if we can learn it and have other agencies take advantage of both the wins and the losses, that's a real feather in our cap. And one of the things we try to really kind of perpetuate is this notion of not just sharing what we've done well or what we've done right, but if there are things that we've done wrong or if we have lessons learned, being very open and transparent about those as well, so other agencies can, you know, take advantage of those learnings.
So what I did this morning prepping for the show is I went to Google, because I'm so sophisticated, and I typed in GSA innovation. I got 524,000 hits. And then I do this thing with autofill all the time. You know, I'll type in Washington Nationals. I'll type in, you know, Baltimore Orioles, and then whatever all fills in, you know.
Yep.
And so I typed in GSA Innovation and talked about the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. I said, well, that's why it's so innovative. That's the push, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's been a huge push in the federal space generally of, you know, providing digital services to the public that really allow the public to interact with GSA the same way that you would interact with a commercial entity. So dealing with the government shouldn't be painful. Dealing with the government shouldn't be a chore or something that you dread. So our Office of Citizen Services is really focusing on how to make those interactions that the public has with government as frictionless and as pleasant as possible.
So you work with that group, separate group, similar to yours?
It's a separate group. You know, we focus very much, GSA IT focuses on enabling GSA, and that tends to be the Federal Acquisition Service or the Public Building Service, whereas the Office of Citizen Services is very much the public-facing element. But, you know, we all work in concert together to help provide the best services across the board.
And so you work for the GSA IT.
I work for GSA IT. Yes.
Similar. And so the 18F, where does that fit in?
18F is actually part of the Office of Citizen Services. And, you know, they kind of have dovetailed into that group. And they're really focusing on helping to enable other agencies to achieve some of the goals that they have in the IT space that are particularly cutting edge or maybe, you know, more forward leaning than IT would tend to be otherwise.
Because when I type in GSA Innovation, I think 18F should be the top of the, maybe you would call Google and say, how come it should be at the top because it is creative, innovative. It's like having a bench of five baseball players that any team in the league can pull off and plug them in when someone gets hurt. I mean, it's very creative and innovative. And I don't know, I've read about it. It has been very successful. 18F has been applied. I haven't followed it really since it was released.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't work a ton with 18F, but, you know, I do kind of keep up with what they're doing. And it's a very interesting model for government. You know, it's kind of like that bench, but you know, it's also like having an internal consultancy of, you know, these really great innovative thinkers that, you know, can be leveraged across government. And that's something that hasn't been done before. And that being able to inject that different sort of perspective in government projects, I think really helps them stay kind of cutting edge.
Much more than managing buildings. That should be the logo. Much more than managing yes. buildings, GSA. Let's hope. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about enterprise application development, strategies to save money, strategies to reuse code and reduce expenses, and hopefully make sure my listeners get home on time and not have to stay till 10 o'clock at night with solving these problems. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Megan Smith, Director, Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Smith, Director, Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy, GSA. We've been talking about Agile. We've been talking about saving money, new positioning for GSA, GSA Innovation. We could do 8 hours in all this. And we touched on Salesforce a few times. And many of my listeners like going to events because they can really target and focus in. They just want to learn about digital signatures, or they just want to learn about correspondence management, or they just want to learn about APIs. They can go to a track and sit in the back of the room and listen to people and find out if they're smart or not. And so there's events all the time that's popping up, and there's an event this week in downtown. Tell us about this event. What's it called?
Yeah, so it's the Salesforce World Tour. It is on April 28th, Thursday, at the DC Convention Center. It's basically Salesforce's big kind of roadshow. It focuses on the federal government as well as, you know, other industries. But, you know, being DC, there is a heavy focus. I'll be facilitating a session in the morning at 8:45 that is specifically the Government Salesforce Community of Excellence, which is actually a group that I chair and I host meetings every other month. So this will be a great opportunity if you're interested in Salesforce or if you're working on it. And you're an IT professional in government, you can join us at 8:30.
Rusty Pickens told me about this group.
Yes, absolutely.
It's govies only.
It is, yes.
And close the door and yell and scream and complain because everyone's the same boat.
Exactly, yes. So we'll be having a meeting there where Salesforce is actually bringing some of their executives to speak specifically to issues and things of interest to the government population.
So let's repeat. It's the Dreamforce at the Washington Convention Center near the Metro, and it's free, isn't it?
It is. It's the Salesforce World Tour at the Convention Center on Thursday.
So if Megan brought up a topic earlier, maybe Salesforce APIs or Agile Software Development, Agile Acquisition, 18F, you can go to her and grab her afterwards and say, hey, Megan, tell me more about this. Now, your name is difficult for me to pronounce, S-C-H-M-I-T-H,
yes.
Smith. I pronounce it correctly, but that's the easy way to find you because how many of those are out there?
Very many Smiths at the event.
Very, very German, very, very Pennsylvania-y German, isn't it? Yeah,
it is.
It's good. But, you know, a lot of people listen to this and they go, I've got some questions and I can maybe spend a half day downtown, 8:45 in the morning. I can go down there and sit in the back of the room and listen and say, this is interesting. And then maybe approach someone and say, hey, Megan, maybe I'll attend this little meetup with just govies and we can talk about the shared problems and shared code. And because my listeners are faced with all kinds of headaches and problems and I can't even list them. I know correspondence management is one of them because, you know, in the commercial world, you can send emails and no one cares. In the federal government, you have to have a very careful record of communications with certain people because it can be pulled up for discovery. Look at commerce alone. It has to be very careful about that. And I'm kind of flip and I make these silly illustrations, but I realize there's a lot of seriousness here too. And I think that's what's important about the conference. You'll have good speakers and good testimonials, but you can hear some serious topics as well. I don't want to get too serious here. Oh, and turn off listeners. Let's get away from serious. Let's talk about your personal technology choices. So there are people who are listening going, wonder what kind of phone she has. Hmm, I wonder if she's a nerd or not. So I've come up with a scientific 10-question test that's going to determine whether or not you are a card-carrying nerd. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay, number one, do you have an Instagram account?
I do.
Hmm, how many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
Only one.
Week. Should every 6 weeks. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do, yes.
Hmm. Have you ever used Blab?
I have not.
Hmm. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I carry an iPhone.
Okay. What's the most popular app in that bad boy?
Probably Facebook.
Hmm. Facebook. How many tablet devices do we have when we break into your house tonight? How many are floating around the house?
Two, actually.
Two, okay. Yeah. And when was your most recent post in social networking?
Yesterday, for sure.
Mm, good, not bad. And when is your Apple Watch due? I don't see an Apple Watch on your arm there.
I don't have one. Soon. Mm. As soon as they come up with a new model.
I'm going for the $17,000 variety.
I'm saving up for the $10,000 model.
Yeah, me too. I don't know why. It's always better time than the $20 model. And the last book you read, was it electronic or was it paper?
It was paper.
Close. You're a potential nerd, but you're close to normal, unfortunately. You're not on the normal side of this curve, but you got to work on having, buy a phone every 6 weeks, have tons of tablets that you don't use, and update every 20 minutes on social media. Maybe you'll be a card-carrying nerd. I've been around for many years, and it's really hard for me to predict smartphones. I didn't see that coming. I saw the internet coming. I saw personal computers coming. I did. I started talking about personal computers in 1991.
Hmm.
I started talking about the internet before the World Wide Web in 94 on National Public Radio. So I can predict some things. I couldn't predict the flood of smartphones and apps. I couldn't predict that 53% of LinkedIn are using it as a mobile service now, and it's all mobile. So I'm going to ask you to put on your thinking cap and make some predictions here about the federal government in the next 5 to 10 years. Are they going to get it? Are they going to, have some kind of a inspiration, some kind of a lightning moment where they go, oh, maybe I don't have to come up with something. Maybe, or are they going to be forced to? What do you see this whole idea of agile software development and software as a service and platforms and reusing code? You think it's going to catch on, or what do you think is going to happen?
I think they're going to get it because they're going to have to. Very much the same way that GSA was facing an aging and expensive infrastructure, and that pushed us to the cloud. The time of making decisions and saying, I'd like to do this in a traditional way versus doing it in, the cloud sort of methodology. There's that decision is largely being made for agencies at this point. I think anymore, you have to fight harder to do things in a traditional way than even, to move to the cloud. So I think, necessity is very much the grandfather of innovation, and agencies are going to have to move.
I never thought of that. Now, I've been doing the show for 10 years. You just articulated something. It's harder to do it in the traditional way than moving to the cloud. Now, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have said that.
Right.
10 years ago, you said, virtualization, that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
And it was. Aileen Black was in the air 10 years ago, and virtual is a server, that's the craziest thing I ever heard. And now it's expected. It's common.
Yeah.
And I think right now we're at the place where traditional is more difficult than moving to the cloud. And you can provide assistance in making that transition or do it on your own and suffer your own fate. It just doesn't make sense to be out there doing it the old-fashioned way. Hmm? Tell me about this concept of category management. I don't know what that means. Are you familiar with that? It's something that I read about when Tom Sharp wrote from GSA about how they want to position themselves, how they want to position GSA in the next few years. Providing customized information on federal projects as well. I guess it's one thing that the GSA does. Is that part of your area or is it too far away from you?
It's not part of my area, but it's very much in line with, that sort of the GSA overall has a philosophy of looking at our processes and trying to make them better and always staying on the cutting edge and shifting and changing to meet the needs and the requirements of either the public or the other agency partners that we support. So category management is just another example of how to make sure that GSA stays as relevant as they can to support agency missions.
One of my avocations is gourmet cooking. My best soup is white bean soup. It's pretty good. But in the federal government, it's SEWP. And over at NASA, they have all kinds of soup over there. And this is an example of savings that they've used GSA for. So tell us about savings on SEWP.
Making sure using pre-negotiated contracts and the vehicles that are out there either through NASA or GSA is definitely advantageous for government. Folks work really hard to get low prices and pre-negotiated rates. So leveraging those is always going to help get more for the agencies that need to buy things.
Again, it's not reusing code here. It's reusing a negotiated rate.
Exactly. Yeah.
it's like reusing a car, reusing a ladder, reusing software, reusing a pre-negotiated agreement. Isn't that something? It's almost like a boilerplate contract that lawyers may use for incorporation or wills or something like that. It seems silly to write it from scratch every time.
Exactly. Not reinventing the wheel is a big theme you see at GSA and I think other forward-leaning agencies.
Where do you see your career heading the next few years?
We were talking about where technology was going in the next 5 or 10 years. I think, you know, my whole focus is enabling GSA IT, the GSA services, as well as reaching out to our partner agencies to help them achieve their missions. Solving problems using technology is something that I'm very passionate about. So solving bigger problems, using more innovative technologies, and keeping current on what's coming up on the cusp of the next few years.
And that's why you're speaking at the Dreamforce, as you're trying to connect to govies and say, look, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, made this mistake, failed at that, got
yep.
up, failed at that, got up, and here's what I learned. And I think recovery is more important than failure. Everyone talks about fail first. No, recover first, is that's the whole idea, and I think you can tell that story well at the Dreamforce conference. Is there a track you're going to look at, or what tracks are you going to participate in or sit in on?
I'll be looking to see sort of what's coming out new in the next couple of releases. Salesforce does 3 releases every year. So I'll be looking for, you know, you were talking about correspondence management, case management, what's happening with the case and service offerings that Salesforce has and how we can best implement them to get additional value out of our licenses.
That's doing more with less.
Yep, exactly.
That's perfect with the theme of the show. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Megan Smith, Director, Enterprise Application Development and Platform Strategy at the GSA. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.